The Miracle of Kate Miller was a TV movie based on a true story of a 13-year-old runner from Philadelphia who, hit by a car, spent 11 weeks in a coma. When she regained consciousness is when her real trial began, because she suffered severe brain damage that literally left her as helpless as a baby. She had to relearn how to eat, drink, walk, and talk. And once she'd done those things, once she finally started, she could think that she could live life again, then she was dealt another blow. When she discovered that all of her friends, her schoolmates, had continued to grow and progress without her. You see, her speech patterns, because of the brain damage, the fluidity of her body motion was far from that of a typical teenage girl. At one point, she had been down to 50 pounds in weight. And so when she compared herself to others, she felt short. She became depressed. She felt defeated. But Kathy Miller had a dream. And that dream was to run again. To run in the North Bank, Philadelphia 10,000-meter race. I mean, that's an ambitious goal. Because of the pain of the training that it would take her to be able to do it. Plus the fact that she would be working with feet crippled by the brain's inability to send messages to them. Yet she built her body up again. Through the pain of her training, she turned defeat into determination. What had once seemed absurd, just entering the race, well, now finishing it, just finishing it, would now be a victory for her. And as you can imagine, when the day of the race came, all the other runners, they sprinted out far ahead of her. But Kathy began to run. Despite falling, sometimes flat on her feet, she ran. She kept picking herself up over and over again, so bloodied, aching, her lungs feeling like they were about to burst at times. She just kept herself faced forward. And so we're moved to say, what faith? To go through an experience like that and to be able to keep on going. But what is real faith? I mean, we're told that we have to have faith in Jesus in order to be saved. But isn't that faith more than just saying, I believe? What is real faith? Well, the answer is found in the story we just read. Probably one of the most famous stories of all of Scripture, of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. A story that begins with a king named Nebuchadnezzar, who was known for his cruelty, not his compassion. And if you recall, last time in Daniel chapter 2, he had a dream. And I guess this dream went to his head. Dream of a big statue, because now he decides to create one for himself. It says of gold, 90 feet high, 9 feet wide. Which sculptors say, those dimensions, it would be disproportionate. In other words, it would be out of whack. Which is what he must have been to have ordered it built, right? So many think this story never happened, that it's just a myth. But is it? In 1982, a team of translators working with artifacts that had been dug up by archaeologists years before discovered a list of Nebuchadnezzar's officials, 50 names, among them Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And on the plains of what they believe were Dura, the area where the story takes place, they have found the remnants of a brick structure, 20 feet high, 45 feet square, which could have served as the foundation for this statue. And if you included that in the dimensions of the 90 feet high, why, it would bring the statue into proportion. And the fact that the structure was made out of brick, It helps explain why there would be a furnace out there in the middle of nowhere, so far from a big city, to make the bricks for the foundation and probably for the core of the statue itself, so that it wasn't actually solid gold. It was just coated with gold. Interesting, huh? But regardless, for its unveiling, old Neb called a convention of all his political lackeys. And then he had some guy named Harold announce his plan to have everyone bow down and worship the statue once they heard the music play. Music? I mean, this was no Taylor Swift, no Bruce Springsteen type of music. This was a new age mix of, it says horns, flutes, drums, bagpipes. But here's the thing, when the music played, people would have fallen down and worship. In a line probably written by Nebuchadnezzar himself, the despot that he was. He said, if you don't worship, it's into the furnace with you. So it's your choice, worship or burn. Worship or burn. But when the music played and the crowd practicing following down, three young men, Hebrew men, still stood. They stood alone. And verses 8 through 12 says, a bunch of astrologers felt it was their duty to let the king know about it. And we don't know why, the text doesn't say, but chances are they were jealous of these three Hebrew men who'd been promoted back in Daniel chapter 2 as Daniel had interpreted the king's dream for him. So Nebuchadnezzar probably favored them, and the astrologers were jealous, but regardless of the reason, they reported it to the king, who became furious. The demented dictator was furious, according to verse 13. He called for the three men, and he effectively said, what are you, deaf? Harold over here, he told you to bow down when the music played. What don't you get? This time, I'm going to give you one more chance, probably because he favored them. And the musicians begin the beguine. You bow, or burn. But again, the band began to play, falling over you. But still, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they stood. And according to verses 16 and 18, they told Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Those were words that did little to calm the king, who was already hot under the collar. Because it says he ordered the furnace to be heated up seven times hotter than it was, which is an idiom simply to say, get that furnace going. Get it as hot as it can be, and then toss those three men into it. And the story says the soldiers bound them and went to throw them in. As the furnace got hotter and hotter and hotter. And you're probably wondering, how hot was it, Jerry? It was so hot that those soldiers that bound them, they became overwhelmed with the heat as they tossed the three men into the furnace. Which is when a miracle happened. In part because scholars tell us the shape of this furnace would have been like an old glass milk bottle. An opening at the top for the smoke to come out. An opening on the side where the bricks were actually fired. And at the bottom where the fuel was added to keep the fire going. And the original language indicates that the men were thrown down into the furnace. Which means they were thrown in from the top. So just the fall itself should have killed them. And if it didn't, then certainly the crowd would have expected to hear these men snap, crackle, and burn. But they didn't. They didn't hear any screams. And it says, as Nebuchadnezzar himself looked into the furnace, he saw four men in there, just a walking and a talking. Four men. A sight that changed old Nebuchadnezzar's attitude and changed it quickly. As paraphrasing verse 26, he hollered into the furnace, yo, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come on out, guys. I didn't mean it. And right there on the spot, he made a proclamation, verses 26 through 28. Because your God rescued you from the flames, and because you were willing to put your life on the line for your God, from now on, nobody can badmouth your God. Nobody. And then, as if to make sure their God wasn't mad at him, Nebuchadnezzar gave them a promotion up the ladder, showing how real faith hangs on to God. Real faith hangs on to God. Something seen in the confidence the young men had. Verses 16 and 17 that I read earlier. Basically, they told the king, we're not going to step into the furnace. We don't think it's going to be any problem for our God to rescue us from the flames. But if he doesn't, it won't be because he can't. You read through the lines, between the lines, it'll be because he chooses not to. But whatever he chooses, we know we'll be right. And they again refused to bow before the pagan idol. Since God's command to have no other gods before me would mean the moment they bowed down to this idol, whether it was a statue of Nebuchadnezzar himself or his favorite little g god, we don't know. But just bowing down to this idol would be going against God. So while Nebuchadnezzar, with his proclamation, basically said, worship or burn, they saw their choice as choosing God or choosing nothing. Because you see, God has no opposite. Anything you would care to trust in other than God is worthless. It amounts to nothing. Think about that. I mean, friends, hey, they disappear. They abandon you over time. Money is certainly not eternal. You can't rely on that. Our own abilities, they're all stolen by age, aren't they? So who did it make sense to trust in? God. God. Even if it meant suffering, trusting God, who had given these three young men all that they had, was better than life without him. And that's real faith. That's real faith. It's trusting that whatever God provides or whatever God does is sufficient. It's loving. It's good. Even if it falls short and even if it contradicts what we desire. Because you see, you and I can never fully anticipate God's plan. We can't really comprehend his infinite wisdom. So what we do, we're in the middle of a trial, we're to pray for what we think is right, but then trust God to answer and in doing what's right. Like with Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Some of you have heard of him. At the age of 24, he was teaching systematic theology at the University of Berlin. Brilliant theologian. He got invited to teach at Union Theological Seminary, upstate New York. The age of 24. And so he came, he relocated here. People came from all over to hear him speak. But then he heard what was going on back in his native Germany. That Hitler was calling ministers to make and take an oath of allegiance. And so he returned to Germany to lead the protest movement against it. He was soon arrested, sent to Buchenwald concentration camp. Later, during the war years, he was transferred to Flossenbürg, where Himmler had him executed just days before that camp was liberated. But it wasn't before some of his writings were smuggled out, including a poem, a portion of which reads, should it be ours to drain the cup of grieving, even to the dregs of pain? At thy command we will not falter, thankfully receiving all that is given by thy loving hand. He returned to Germany, knowing it might mean his death. He continued to believe in God, despite being put in the concentration camps. He clung to God through it all. And by his example, he bolstered the faith of others in the camp, and he witnessed the greatness of his God to so many. And he taught them that real faith includes accepting the hard things, not always being delivered from them. How about you? Are you going through a time of testing? Maybe some illness, just suffering that's draining your finances? Maybe it's a relationship problem, some member of the family? Whatever it is, here's the situation. Let's say it's an illness. What do you do if God doesn't heal you? You pray for it, but God doesn't heal you. But who knows why? I mean, it may be so that you'll be in a particular place to witness to a particular person, but you may never know why on this side of eternity. But do you give up on God then? Do you abandon him? Real faith hangs on to God. It means accepting the hard things and not always being delivered from them. Because real faith is always forged in the furnace, isn't it? It's always forged in a furnace. I mean, it's easy for someone to claim he has faith when no demands are ever put on him. Easy to say that you believe. Like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. How did we really know that they were faithful? Was it when they claimed that they would be? Or was it when they actually stepped into the furnace? I mean, by its very nature, faith has to be tested to be proven real. It has to be tested. For example, as long as a person has lots of money, does he really need to have the faith that God's going to feed him? Isn't it more apt to be the person who has no idea where his next meal is coming from? That faith is more apt to spring up in him than the person whose refrigerator is full? In Robert Schuller's book, Tough Times Never Last, But Tough People Do, he talked about his own daughter, Carol, who was in a terrible motorcycle accident at the age of 17. She spent 7 months in the hospital recovering from it. Her leg was all banged up, developed into an infection. She ended up having it amputated, ending her career playing softball professionally and her spot on the U.S. Olympic ski team. 7 months in the hospital recovering. And after she got out, her parents took her on a cruise to help her recover her strength. But through it all, she said, God has a reason for this. He's got a purpose and can use this in my life. And on that cruise, they call for the traditional onboard talent contest. And she entered it saying she wanted to compete. But when she got on stage, she used that moment to give her testimony to the crowd. She said, I specifically want to speak to all of you who've been staring at my artificial leg. I want to tell you about the 7 months I spent in the hospital developing a new talent. And that new talent was to understand how real my faith was to me. How real my faith is. Tested in the furnace of being in that hospital, clinging to life, forged her faith. And she said, now that I look at those of you who are without a limp, I know that it isn't how you walk that's important, but it's who you walk with. It's who you walk with. Our three heroes walked with God. And so God walked with them and the person of that angel into the furnace, into the flames. And of course, that's Jesus' promise to each of us, isn't it? Matthew 28:20. Basically, you walk with me, I'll be with you always. I'll be with you always. Maybe you're here this morning. Is your faith being forged in a furnace? With illness? Problems with finances? Again, a relationship issue? Whatever it is, when you pray, when you walk with Jesus, he will walk with you. We probably all know godly people who we've talked with, and I'm sure that they would probably all witness to you that the times when they've experienced Christ's presence the greatest degree has been during some of the darkest moments of their lives, when Christ has revealed himself in their lives, not during the good times. And of course, speaking of darkness, you've heard the expression about blind faith. Well, faith is never blind. Real faith is never blind. It just looks ahead, ahead to God's reward. Oswald Chambers once wrote, "When we have faith, when we believe, we see God all the time." And this was experienced these three men had. They saw God in the person of that angel, and they saw God at work in their situation because of that angel granting them protection. And you know, and you stop and think about it, you read through between the lines of the story, even before they stepped into the furnace, through the eyes of faith, they saw what was ahead. They saw God's reward. They saw heaven. They saw that the resurrection was real. How do we know? Well, think about it. If they hadn't believed in heaven, in something beyond this earthly life, why would they have stepped into the furnace? It wasn't as though stepping into the furnace was going to save anybody else's lives. If they didn't know heaven was ahead, why would they have? Would you? They saw God's reward. You know, it's human nature for us to have our treasure here on earth. We want to pray for healing now. We want to pray for our child's progress now. We want to pray for a solution, what's happening at work now. We want to change in somebody's attitude now. But here's the thing. Ephesians 1:3 says that as a believer, you've already been given every spiritual blessing in Christ. So that real faith that sees beyond this world, real faith says that even when your prayer isn't answered the way you think it ought to be answered, when it doesn't match your desires, you're carried by the fact that you can see ahead through your trials to know that heaven awaits. Heaven awaits. So when you pray and you stick with Jesus, even when your prayer isn't answered, it isn't because you fear going to hell. So I better stick with Jesus. You stick with Jesus even when your prayer isn't answered because you look forward to spending eternity in heaven with him. According to the opening verses of John chapter 14, you know he's gone before you to prepare a place for you. Real faith. What is it? Kathy Miller knows. As the crowd watched her, she seemed to be running alone. With her crippled foot, her cadence became one of sticking her good foot forward and then bringing the other one up to it, dragging it up. So it became step and drag, over and again. Kept going forward. And finally, the city blocks turned into miles. The sun began to set. She still moved forward into the last stretch of her run. And then when she finally felt that she had to give up, that she couldn't go on anymore, there along her route began to appear friends that she'd grown up with, friends that she thought had abandoned her. And they began to cheer. "Kathy, you can do it! You can do it!" And she did. Oh, she didn't win the race, but just to finish the race was a victory for her. And as a result, the Philadelphia sports writers gave her their award of valor. As did the International Award for Valor was also given to her, just for finishing the race. And when she was interviewed, she said, "Winning is not necessarily being the first. It's not about being the best at something. Winning, to me, is giving what you've got for the Lord. Just coming through the trial that you face." And when she was asked what advice she would give to others who are feeling defeated, who were feeling down. She said, "My word is to just hang in there. Hang in there. Keep plugging at it, knowing that you're winning through Christ and that He's there. And He's there. And He's there. And He's there. And you'll win in His perfect timing." Daniel was a prophet to a defeated people who were living in exile from their homeland. He recorded the story of his three friends to teach them what real faith is. If you're in the midst of a trial, real faith is hanging on to God. Do it, and He'll grow your faith. He'll grow your faith in the furnace of what you're facing. And you'll be able to see forward and know that no matter how things seem against you, whatever the curve that's been thrown your way, no matter how bad it is, you can keep on going. How can you be sure? Because when you, with faith, you know Jesus died so that you can live. Let's pray.